Fanatic. 97.5 The Fanatic.
And a very fuzzy good evening, everybody. A Sunday night. Late March. Still sunny out. Beautiful spring-type day. And I'm Kevin Cooney. This is 97.5 The Fanatic jam-packed show. And tap here until 9 o'clock. Talking a lot of baseball. And we'll get started here in a second. First hour, of course, you can join us on the phone, 610-632-0975. We'll take calls on anything. You want to mention the Sixers after what happened last night? I mean, it's pretty clear that Doc Rivers is kind of throwing in the towel on getting the second seed, which I'm okay with. I know there were some people last night who were like, you know, why is he playing Deadman this much instead of Paul Reed? Because he wants to see stuff. That's what he's doing. It's the whole thing with Doc Rivers because, again, I heard Ray mention this. I've heard everybody mention this. I heard Connor and Tom mention it during the afternoon. Pretty much, you can forget about they don't care. Anything that matters is going to be that first and second round, how they get through the second round. Okay? If they don't get to the Eastern Conference Finals, then everything goes up in smoke. And I think you saw that last night. And a bad game to watch, by the way. Just not entertaining. Yes, Embiid played, but no Durant, no Harden. Just kind of blah. So they'll be in Denver tomorrow night. There'll be some juice to that game because it's Jokic and Embiid one last time. You could call up about the NCAA tournament, which is, I believe, a disaster. San Diego State and Florida Atlantic will play in a national semifinal next Saturday. I think the folks at CBS are happy about that one. They've gone from a year of blue bloods with Kansas and Villanova and North Carolina and Duke, and you had Duke and Carolina as the big show on Saturday night, which ended up being Mike Krzyzewski's last game. I can guarantee you one thing. Florida Atlantic and San Diego State, that's the 6:30 special, brothers. That's game one. They are not putting that as the nightcap. Jim Nance is going to have to explain where Florida Atlantic is. It's in Boca, by the way. Jerry's dad, I think, went there on Seinfeld. But for me, most of this show, rightfully wrong, it's about baseball. And I got to admit, baseball is the sport that's closest to my heart. We talk football. I love football. I love the NBA. I love March Madness. I love I love the NHL. But the one that has had their grips on me since I was 4 years old going to Veterans Stadium seeing my first game, which was the Reds with Joe Morgan and Pete Rose and Tony Perez and George Foster against the Phillies with Tug McGraw and Steve Carlton and Greg Luzinski. And from that moment, from that first moment, I remember walking into that place. It gripped me in attention. Okay? And I've loved the sport ever since. And I've loved it even through times when it has been difficult to love it, especially in this town. Through strikes, through stupid rule changes, like, I don't know, like trying to put a runner on second base in the 10th inning and, you know, just make of the game like a rock and jock softball game. Okay? Through bad teams. Uday Brito, you know, how many bad Phillies can you name? By the way, if you want to get on that, like, you're the Philly that absolutely is the most mediocre in your lifetime, feel free to give a call at 610-632-0975. Okay? But the sport grips you, and especially at this time of year, okay? Because we know what it means. It means that summer's here. It means, you know, you can listen down the shore. It means you can, it's that background noise in your living room at night when you're watching TV. And you hope it means October. And what this team did last year in making it to October and setting this city ablaze. You know, I was fortunate enough when I was at the Courier Times to cover the teams from 07 to 11 and to live those Octobers. And I have to admit, except for the year they won the World Series, there was nothing like what happened here last year. Nothing. Maybe because I saw it from a different viewpoint. Maybe because I was outside the bubble. You know, sometimes when you're covering something, if as a reporter, you get a little entranced and just, okay, what's the clubhouse thing and all that. And you don't see people hugging and high-fiving and, you know, walking around on the streets because you're working. Okay? But what this team did for a city that had been starving for their baseball team to matter. They had starved since that moment Ryan Howard collapsed in 2011. They wanted something to grip onto. And they lived through Ryan Sandberg. And they lived through the Pence and Victorino trades on the same day, which were a disaster. And failed prospects and everything. And they almost given up on the sport completely. And October and September was an indication of that. You know, there were 16,000-17,000 people in the ballpark in September when they were in a quote unquote pennant race because people thought it's artificial. You know, it's the adding of the new wild card. It's the, you know, they don't have a shot. Well, when they went and beat St. Louis and then they split those games in Atlanta, you saw how this town felt towards baseball. And hopefully it's something that carries over. And I know, as Ray said, this has not been a great week, okay? The Suarez news is a little concerning, but I think he'll be okay. The Hoskins thing, and we talked about it a little bit yesterday, is devastating. Where the right-handed power comes from on this team, I don't know. It's a question that is going to have to get answered here at some point because their lineup balance is thrown off. You know, you have Schwarber and you have Harper. Okay. Those are your two bombers. Okay. You also have Real Muto who can hit home runs, but you're not going to necessarily count on him to do that primarily. And Castellanos is the right-handed power hitter you hope he develops into, but there's no indication right now he's going to be that. So they have to find something. But yet they're still really good. Turner is a huge acquisition. Trey Turner is going to be somebody this town is going to fall in love with. They've already done it. One, because he chose here, which is always like the first criteria. If you choose us, you know, Cliff Lee came here and it was like a puppy. Cliff could do no wrong. You know, except Cliff at the end really kind of turned out to be a non-factor. So through all this, they have a really good team. Their bullpen's deeper. Their starting rotation is solid. Okay? I know people are worried about Aaron Nola. Don't worry about Aaron Nola yet. Aaron Nola will be fine. And Aaron Nola's contract's not going to really be a big deal. If I'm giving you odds right now, it's still 85% Aaron Nola's with the Phillies in 2024. He loves it here. They love him. They just didn't come to an agreement right now. I don't think it's bad for either side. I think it's okay if both of them want to see what's out there. If the Phillies overpaid right now, you'd be criticizing them for just making a deal just because they got sentimental. We said that with Fletcher Cox and the Eagles. Didn't we? So let him go. Let him go see the market. And if you think that John Middleton's not going to pay up, you're crazy. You haven't watched what this guy has done. The Phillies are playing in that deep end of the pool. And their neighbors are very few. The Dodgers, the Yankees, the Mets. That's it. That's a pretty good neighborhood to be in. Where you can basically outspend your mistakes. The Castellanos thing could be a mistake. I think it's pretty clear that Castellanos signing could end up being a mistake. And yet they're still probably a playoff team. As I said to Ray, one benefit they have with the six teams in the playoffs, National League's about seven deep. There's not going to be a Marlins or a Nationals or a Pirates or, you know, maybe you worry a little bit about the Brewers or the Cardinals, whoever doesn't win that division. But that's it. You know, maybe the Giants, if they, but I kind of think the Giants could fall apart. It's there for the Phillies. And the Phillies are going to be judged by September and October. And if they hold the line, if they hold their head above water until they get their relief at the end of May, early June, when number three comes back, and Bryce Harper's DHing, no, he's not going to play first base. No matter what you've seen, he's not playing first base because if you have Tommy John surgery and you can't throw from the outfield, you're not going to try to turn a 3-6-3 double play. Okay? It is as good a time as this organization has had. You can make an argument dating back to the 70s. That 07 to 11 run, that was special. This crew has a shot to do that as well. Enjoy it. Opening day is here. Everybody has a shot, and they have a legitimate shot. This isn't you fooling yourself into thinking, well, you know, if everything breaks right, they could get the 86 and get the... No. They're a contender. They're really good. And provided that they stay a little bit healthy, they should be playing October baseball. Brendan Gunn is behind the glass. Brendan, how are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's funny because I don't know. You've been around here. I mean, the amount of negativity this week towards this team has kind of befuddled me. Like, look, Rhys Hoskins is a big loss. I'm not minimizing it. But they can overcome this. I mean, he's not the guy. I thought what Scott Lauber wrote this week was right. He's not the one guy that if you lost it, it's over.
Yeah, definitely not. I think it's going to be tough to replace him, but a couple guys need to step up. You can get his home runs. Maybe Castellanos has a bounce back year.
Maybe
some home runs made up there. Exactly, Alec Boehm. Yeah, I think they're going to be a mid-90 win team. So,
and the thing is, like, you know, Derek Hall's not bad.
No, he's serviceable.
He's serviceable. And if he's not, Dave Dombrowski and John Middleton and Sam Fold are going to go in late June and go, okay, who can we go get? CJ Cron.
Santana,
whatever. They'll go make the move.
Yeah, they're going to get the job done. I don't think this hinders them as much as people are trying to make it seem. So I think they're going to be all right.
I said this on the crossover. I feel better about them than I would the Mets right now. Looking at them objectively.
Yeah, any of those pitchers on the Mets can go out with a significant injury. I don't wish that on anybody, but they're getting up there in age. Like, you never know.
And their lineup's not as good.
Yeah, and they lost their closer.
Yeah.
So they just paid.
Now, they'll go make a move, I would think, if they need to. But the Phillies are right there. The Phillies are as good as anybody in the National League.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be real fun. Like, I take the Braves in the regular season, but I think the Braves are just built for the regular season a little better.
Yeah. I mean, they're young, so.
Yeah. And they're young. They have good starting pitching.
We'll see. I mean, losing Dansby Swanson, it could be big. Losing him and Freddie Freeman in back-to-back
years.
Yeah,
but you know what? They replace everybody. And you got to think Acuña is going to have a better year.
Yeah, he's not going to have a down year like last year. So.
And the memories of him in the playoffs were just awful in that series against the Phillies.
Didn't show up.
No.
memories?
Exactly. Well, how about him not covering on the Real Muto inside the park home run? That's my primary memory of him.
What a great day.
All right, so here's the show lineup tonight. Okay, we are here. All right, we're going to take a break. Then we're going to have a first segment. Anything you can want to talk about, 610-632-0975. At the top of the hour, 7 o'clock, we're fortunate Charlie Manuel will join us. Charlie will join us from Clearwater, talk a little bit about what he's seen down there. We'll tell some old baseball stories, I hope, as well, because it's Charlie. That's the fun part. And Charlie will give us a little bit of a scouting report on some of the hitters. Derek Hall especially, I think, is one. And Castellanos is another that I'll be fascinated to talk to. 8 o'clock, we have Bob Nightingale on from USA Today. Bob put out his prediction today. I think you're going to like it. I think if you haven't heard it, you'll like it. Or you'll cringe because it's Bob and you think that'll be a curse somehow. And at 8:30, Matt Gelb, who covers the Phillies for a long time for The Athletic and formerly The Inquirer, will join us. I believe Matt may just be back from Clearwater, and we can talk to him about the Nola situation and other things. So it's a baseball-heavy show. But if you want to talk Sixers, you want to talk NCAA tournament, you want to talk Eagles, 610-632-0975. I'm Kevin Cooney. That's Brendan Gunn on the other side. Happy to have you with us on a Sunday night. This is 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Bob Nightingale, again, on the Comcast Business Hotline. Bob, how are you?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks, Kevin.
I appreciate you joining me here. You're still in Arizona, I'm assuming, correct?
Yeah, here till Tuesday, and then going to Houston after Final Four, but for the Astros opening day.
For the Astros opener? Well, there may be a lot of hotel rooms available in Houston with everything going on with the Final Four, so.
That's crazy.
All right, so you came out today and said you like the Guardians and the Phillies in the World Series. And I think around here this week, with everything going on with the Rhys Hoskins injury, a little bit of concern over Ranger Suarez and all that, I think some of the enthusiasm has been dampered, but you're pretty high on what the Phillies could be once they get everybody healthy, right?
Yeah, I really am. I mean, they'll get Harper back in a few months. And I think they can withstand the injury to Hoskins. And we all know, great guy, very good player, streaky, so you just never know. And I think they can, Suarez now is a different story. I think they really need him, to step up and kind of be the guy that he was last year. But they're so aggressive, Dombrowski makes the right trades, John Moulton, blank checkbook, but he'll get whoever they want at the trade deadline. So, I think it'll be very good.
When you look at their landscape, obviously, they've had this roster. They've tinkered and tinkered and tinkered over the years trying to get in the playoffs, and it felt like that playoff absence was a big load on the whole organization. How much of that is now lifted since they made that run last year?
Well, I think big. Now they know they can do it. It's a thing too, where now you don't have to keep talking about the 08 and that great run they had through 7 through 11. So no, I think got everybody excited in the organization, and kind of brings back memories what that place was like. I was talking to Trey Turner during the WBC. And he was saying, man, I kept hearing so many things about it and what it was like. And everybody says, yeah, that's what it was. Same thing with Schwarber. And people said, it brought back all those memories of those great Philadelphia teams, so recently.
How much does the Turner acquisition change the makeup of their lineup with having that guy at the top of the order that can, look, you saw in the WBC, he can hit for power, but I think mainly him just being a consistent on-base presence, which they didn't really have last year.
Yeah, no, I think he's a huge. I mean, I think of all the things that happened last year, I'm during the winter, he was easily the best, free agent pickup. I think this guy's one of the top five players in all of baseball. He's just a dynamic guy. And, so he'll be a threat on the bases. I think he's a much better defensive player than kind of analytics shows. He'll be in one spot. Not doing those crazy shifts and everything like that, but no, he can make things happen. I think he was a great acquisition for the Phillies.
Bob Nightingale joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Bob, yesterday the Phillies announced, well, Dombrowski comes out and basically says that the contract talks with Aaron Nola are going to stop. They both kind of made it sound like that it was okay, that there's no hard feelings, but they're not going to get to the finish line before the opener of the season. He would be the number one guy, presumably, on the market next winter. Should Philly fans be nervous, or do you think this is just kind of a hitch in the road?
Well, I mean, I think he'll get over $200 million, I'm sure. You know, he's asking for a high price because the pitching market's so thin. I mean, you look at next year, and you got, obviously, Ohtani's number one.
Right.
Probably Julio Urias of the Dodgers, number two. And then, you know, then he's number three. There's kind of a big drop-off.
Yeah, Michaelis would be the next one after that, correct?
And they just locked him up for 2 years for $40 million.
Okay, that's fair. Looked at some old info then. So.
No, it just happened. You know, a day ago. And so, you know, he's probably thinking teams can be starving for, you know, pitching. You know, let me see what's out there. You know, we're seeing what, you know, Verlander and Cole are making $43 million a year apiece. I'm not saying that's what he's asking for, but I'm sure he's thinking, hey, what Garrett Cole got, you know, at 36 a year. You know, let me try to get in that stratosphere.
Who do you see as the Phillies' biggest threat within this division? Is it still the Braves?
Yeah, absolutely. It's still Atlanta. I think even, you know, with all the talk of the Mets, even before the Diaz injury, I thought they were the third best team in the division. I still think, yeah, that Tina beats Atlanta. There's, you know, even the lost Dansby Swanson, Freeman, you know, year before that. They're just so good and talented and play the game right. So, no, I think the division definitely goes to Atlanta.
I was saying this as we began the show. It feels like the National League is maybe seven teams deep. That for playoff spots, that maybe you could throw the Brewers in, maybe the Giants, but the teams that you saw last year, yeah, the Padres are going to get Tatis back and everything at some point. That these teams are all kind of the same group that you saw at the end of last year, and I think that's the one dynamic of the playoff system that's not exactly great is the idea that you may see the same faces over and over again for a while.
Yeah, if you look at the American League too, Kevin, it's very possible we have the same 12 teams. You're absolutely right. In the National League.
Yeah, because you don't even have, like, Boston coming out of nowhere, and Baltimore doesn't feel like it's ready to compete and break that curse either, or through that groove
either. No. Yeah, I mean, it's still in the AL East. You're still, like, the three teams, the Toronto, you know, Yankees and Tampa, and, you know, only one team coming out of the Central. You know, I still think Cleveland's that team. And then, you know, the two teams in the West, Houston, you know, in the National League, you know, like you said, you know, maybe the Brewers can stun the Cardinals, but that would be the only change there. And it's hard to see anybody slipping ahead of the Dodgers and the Padres out West. And, of course, you know, the three-headed monster in the NL East.
Do you think that the sport right now, obviously they made all these changes, they're coming off a successful WBC. I'm not a huge fan of it, but it worked, I think, to what they wanted. Do you think the sport right now, labor strife kind of puts it aside and everything, how with the new rules coming in, how good a spot is the sport in as we begin 2023?
You know, I talked to Rob Manfred in Miami during WBC, and he thinks that the attendance will bounce back to what it was maybe 6-7 years ago.
Pre-COVID, you know, right?
Yeah, looking at the attendance figures for season ticket sales and everything else. So, you know, now you got, you know, more teams involved in the they get in the playoffs. So I think it's pretty healthy. I mean, the thing that scares everybody is the regional sports networks. You know, what happens there with the Valley stations, you know, that affects like 14 teams. Mm-hmm. So and it sounds like those teams will get their money. Most of them will. But a few, you know, teams like, you know, Arizona and Colorado, they may be saying, wait a minute now, it's not worth it. You know, you guys go play on your own channel. You know, that sort of thing. But otherwise, I think that, you know, I don't know, I didn't see the attendance, figures for spring, but I would think it had to be pretty healthy from, you know, everything I saw.
And if you think of it, I mean, the new rule changes are designed to keep people interested, especially to change the demographics, maybe a little bit younger, with shorter games and all that. they did try to tinker those changes this week. How much of an impact do you think that'll have?
Yeah, I mean, just more of a clarification, you know, like, okay, let's say, you know, if someone needs a little more time, we'll do it. You know, but some guys falls down swinging, you know, you don't have to pop up like a jack in the box and get in that box. So, no, I mean, the games move quick, you know, without even, you know, most of these games I'm in Arizona, you know, less than 2:30, almost too quick sometimes, you know.
Right.
You can't bill for a guy selling beers. Like, wait a minute now. I'm losing a lot of money.
That's been brought up here about whether they're going to extend beer sales beyond, like, the sixth or seventh inning because of the fact that it's going so quick.
You always have to, especially in spring training. The games, you know, people want to lounge in the stands and in the sun. You know, they don't care about the, you know, game going long. They want to be there. And then there were some games, a Reds game, you know, went 152. And it's like, you know, you show up late there.
Right.
You don't even have time to, you know, it goes on one beer down.
Bob Nightingale joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Bob, you like the Turner acquisition. You have him, I think, did you name him MVP, possible NL MVP this year?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I mean, I saw him in the WBC, obviously, he went off. But living in Phoenix, you know, I got to see him a decent amount playing for the Dodgers. And he's just a guy that makes things go. I mean, he really is. The Padres are heartbroken. And they offered more than the Phillies did. I think they offered 330, 340. And they were stunned he turned it down. But he always talked about, you know, to his friends and people said, I want to go back east. You know, he's a Florida kid. He didn't want to get traded in the first place from Washington. He's very disappointed about it. Mm-hmm. But he just loves the East Coast feel. And, you know, what better East Coast field than being in Philadelphia?
It's funny to have – you have the two financial super teams in the East between the Phillies and the Mets. And the Braves are just this team that generates players left and right that come through. And that you can let a Freeman and a Swanson go, and you're not worried that they're going to fall off the cliff. It's pretty remarkable what Atlanta's done in this entire run that they've had under Brian Snitker.
Yeah, it's almost like they put a price tag on guy and said, okay, you know, we're not going to pay you anymore. You know, they offered Swanson $100 million. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that time, I think Swanson probably would have signed for $120, $125. And they said no, it never budged. It was like Freddie Freeman. You know, they offered him, what was it, $130 or so.
Right.
It never budged. But, yeah, you know, the Dodgers do the same thing. But the Dodgers' payroll, of course, is, you know, a whole lot higher than Atlanta's is. Atlanta proves you can have a kind of a mid-sized payroll and win.
So you got Cleveland coming out of the American League. What is it about the Guardians that you like at this point?
You know, it's a I don't love them.
they have a very young team, but they don't have a lot of power, is what everybody says.
No, they need Josh Bell to be the guy that he was in Pittsburgh. You know, showing that kind of power. They really need him. They have so many prospects. Tim is like, okay, they need some help with the trade deadline.
Right.
I think they'll move these guys to go get them. I was told they offered a ton of great prospects to Oakland for Sean Murphy.
Right.
Obviously, they didn't get them. They went to Atlanta instead.
Right.
But, you know, if they need some help with the deadline, I really get the sense being around that team is they want to do everything possible to get a World Series for Francona before he retires.
Yeah,
I really get the feeling.
Because Tito's health, obviously, it's year to year with Tito at this point. You know, I mean, he's had health issues. Yeah.
Yeah. This spring, actually, Damon, you know, no walking boot. He didn't even, motorized cart to get around. He just walked. The only thing that went wrong is, you know, him chipping his tooth and swallowing it without realizing it in frozen dinner.
That's such a Francona story, too. I could just picture that happening. Bob Nightingale from USA Today, read him, and the Gannett papers, read him every day, because pretty much writes every day at some point here, and follow him on Twitter. Bob, I appreciate it, man. I hope you can come back on during the season, and we'll talk more baseball.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks,
Thank
Bob. You, Bob Nightingale joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
One of the most fascinating people that's ever been in the Philadelphia sports scene joins us now on the Comcast Business Hotline, the winningest manager in Philly's history, still working with the team as a special consultant. He's spent a lot of time around the cage down in Clearwater. It's Charlie Manuel. Charlie, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, guys. I ran off and forgot my phone.
That's fine. And Missy sent me a glorious picture from Palm Pavilion, and I'm very jealous of you right now.
Well, it's good. I got home, so I got my phone ready.
That's awesome. All right, Charlie, you could speak to this better than anybody. We're 3 days away from the opener. How anxious are those guys to get on an airplane and get to Texas at this point and just to get this thing going?
Oh, I mean, they're ready. I mean, they can't wait. I mean, I hear them today in the cage talking, and they were, you know, like they were looking forward to really getting out of Clearwater, going to Texas, and getting ready for that first game. And everything about our spring training has been exciting as far as the workouts go and people doing the work. And, you know, we've got a lot of karma on our team, and really, it's really fun to, you know, like watch our players, you know, like the way they talk about last year getting in the World Series and how great it was, and they definitely thinking about finishing it off this year. They're definitely looking forward to the season.
Charlie, you helped break a playoff drought when you were here back in 07, and it was 14 years at that point. And then the following year, you guys came back and won it all. And obviously, it's a different circumstance. They made this run last year all the way to the World Series. But how much did camp change from 07 to 08 with just that weight of we haven't made the playoffs being lifted? And how much do you think that'll help this group that they don't have to deal with that anymore?
I think when I listen to them and I see how they interact with one another, I think to myself, you know, like it's a lot of similar we got beat three straight by Colorado, if you remember.
Right, I remember.
I've always said about that was the deadest clubhouse I've ever seen in baseball. And I've been in the game for 61 years. And nobody said a word. You know, like it was really very, very quiet. We got on a plane, you know, like and flew back to Philadelphia. And, you know, like I thought to myself, you know, like it was one of the toughest things, you know, like that I ever seen. But then, you know, like I go through the winter and I've always talked about, you know, like I would sit down sometime and try to write up a speech to say when I get to spring training. And when I got up that year, you know, like I looked around the room and I saw all of our guys and I saw, you know, how much they wanted to play and you know, like you could tell there was a big change in them and everything like that. And they talked about, you know, like winning, like Jimmy Rollins, eventually came out and said we were the team to beat and all that. But at the same time, you know, like that was a huge difference. I didn't have to talk very, very long that day. It was everything about it was positive. It was a great feel in the room. And I look at our team right now and I see something very similar to that. And, you know, like I listen to our guys talk and, with the team, with the players that we've added, you know, like, and once we get Harper back, our offense is going to be tremendous. We got talent. We got a very talented pitching staff. And when the season starts, we do have to be a little bit more. We have to be better as far as quality strikes and also command of strike zone.
Charlie, how much does the injury to Hoskins, though, hurt that lineup? And how worried would you be about kind of, you know, your two main power hitters are Harper and Schwarber, both left-handed, not having that right-handed necessary complement you could count on for 30 to 40 home runs?
Well, you know, like I look at Hoskins' blow. You know, like yeah, that's a. I mean, that's too bad, and that's terrible. But at the same time, too, you know, like we got to keep going on, and you know, like we got to look ahead. We're in a good position, though. You know, like with Hall coming on as much as he has been, he really looks real good at the plate. And then also too, we, you know, like we got some extra guys that, that are pretty good players. And when you talk about, Trey Turner, you know, like he's capable of hitting, anywhere from 20, 30 home runs.
Right.
And hitting 300, you know, like I think, you know, like I look at him and, I think it, you know, like we got to really, play better at first base. You know, like I think Hall can definitely play there. I mean, I've seen him. I mean, he's pretty good and he's got power. He's got, of course, he's from the left side. But then again, like I said, Turner can definitely make up for, you know, like some of the power that, that
on the right side.
With Hoskins. Yeah, but I also see a lineup who's deep. It's deep. We need, of course, we need from Marsh and Strott. And I think Baum's going to really be good because I think the shift, taking the shift away from Baum, you know, like they shifted like it was a left-hand pull hitter. And that right there is going to mean all the difference in the world if he just, you know, keeps lining the ball all over the field. And if he can pull some balls, you know, that's going to make a big difference in his power and his production.
When you talk about Hall, obviously the one fear is his average against lefties. Can he adjust? Right. Can he adjust and hit left-handers? You think?
You know what? If you go back and look, I remember when I used to see him in Lakewood. When he, a long time ago, you know, like 2 years ago, I mean, you know, like, and he hangs in good on lefties. I think the more that he gets to see them, you know, I think he can contribute against lefties and he definitely is capable of hitting balls out of ballpark. And, you know, like, I think he's definitely improved his power over the last couple of years because his stance is good. I think that Kevin Long and them has been doing a good job, you know, like, getting him with a tremendous approach at the plate, man. He looks really good. And I think I think he's very, very capable of doing better against him. And also too, I definitely think that we got enough depth where, if Robbie Thompson wants to set him sometime on a lefty that he can and things like that. I think if you can pick and choose him on the lefty and probably, you know, get him a lot of at bats. But, you know, we got some options on our team.
Right.
And we got depth. And, I think that, yeah, we're going to miss Hoskins because that is, you know, 30 homers and his run production is very important to our team. But now we got a lot of options to find, find enough, offense, somewhere else with the rest of our guys.
The great Charlie Manuel joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Charlie, Trey Turner's addition at the top of the lineup, and you mentioned his power, but the ability for him, one, he's consistent to get on base, and his ability with the new rules to maybe steal 40 bags, how much does that just change the dynamics of what this lineup can be?
That right there gives us, what that gives us is what I used to always think about. I always wanted an offense that could score and manufacture runs in every phase of the game. And that means that we can, you know, and not only do we have power, you know, like we have, hitters in, Harper and, Turner and, JT, Remuto and things like that. We got hard contact hitters, but we got power and now we got speed. And also, you know, like, if we can play some situation baseball, like run and get in scoring position, I think that right there makes our offense much better and also it makes it better to watch.
Your buddy Boa created a stir last week when he predicted that Harper would be back sooner than the original deadline. Do you see the same thing?
You know what? I know this. I know Harper's been doing his work and things like that, and I think it. Our guys are on top of it, and I think it. Harper, he's going to want to come back just as soon as possible, and things. But I don't know exactly what the date he'll be back will be, but. Maybe it'll be earlier than we think, and you know, like hopefully it will, because we definitely need him in our lineup.
You are a baseball traditionalist. I mean, you've spent your whole life in the game, and one of the joys that I had when I was a writer was the idea of being able to sit around and hear your stories. And yet, like this, they've done a lot of things the sport has to change it with the pitch right. clock. With the throwovers, with everything. Do you like this? Do you like what they've done?
You know, I saw the pitch clock last year. I did in the minor leagues, and I did think it took anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes off of the game. It, you know, like if it was run right, which would help in some ways. But at the same time, too, when the way you were talking and you opened the door for me to say the things about pitching that really kind of I'm concerned about is when you see someone like a Holiday, Jamie Moyer, or, Cliff Lee, right. Hamels, Maddox, and those guys, they used the art of pitching, you know, like they could speed the game up, they could slow it down.
They had an internal clock.
Exactly. They completely commanded the tempo of the game. And, you know, like I question it, that the clock might interfere with that kind of pitching.
Do you like the pickoff, rule?
No, you know, like I don't make the rules and things like that.
I know you don't, but you're respected enough that I figured you would have an opinion on it.
I got an opinion. No, I don't like it. You know, like, and also, I don't like the 10th inning rule. And
I'm right there with you.
The reason I don't like the 10th inning rule is when they say that, well, it helps save the pitching. Well, you know, like that's what the long season's about. If we play an 18 inning game tonight and you know, like we win that game, I guarantee you we are feeling much better than that other team. And our pitchers that we threw will bounce back quicker than theirs and things like that. And it's an endurance season. So why would I even consider that? Because that's right there is what the importance of the season you play for. You know, like you try to get people to make a lot of moves in the game. You know, like use a pitching staff, and also kind of get disarray in their rotation and their bullpen. So you know, that's why I don't dislike it.
Charlie, what does opening day mean to you?
It means everything. You know, like I walked up there the other day in the spring training game. I could smell pizza. I could smell hot dogs. I could smell hamburgers. I looked down there and all these people, probably they see each other once a year or something like that. And they mingle and having conversation. There's a kind of an aura in the ballpark, you know, that creates some energy and it tells you spring is here. And winter's over and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, just the fact that just being there is relaxing because I've been there all my life, it seems like.
Yeah. Charlie Manuel joining us live from Clearwater. Charlie, I appreciate you joining me tonight. I'll see you at the ballpark at some point here, hopefully soon. And I owe you a dinner. Let's put it that way. So
okay, I want to tell you something. Always nice talking to you. You're one of my favorites, man.
I appreciate it, Charlie. Thanks, man. Yeah. Say hi to Missy for me.
Yeah, I sure will.
Thanks. Charlie Manuel joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, he's the beat writer for The Athletic, formerly The Inquirer. He has been there since day one of The Athletic, covering the Phillies. And I believe he is just getting a little refreshed before he heads to Texas on a Sunday night. Glad he could join us. It's Matt Gell. Matt, how are you? Did I hit the wrong button? Yes, I think I did. Matt, are you there?
Coondog, what are you doing?
I'm good. I hit the wrong button. I hit the wrong side button. So I'm trying to get this done. How are you doing, man?
I'm good.
Are you still in Clearwater, or are you back home before Texas?
Came home just for a few days, and I'll meet the team in Texas this week. It's kind of crazy that opening day is here. It doesn't feel – I mean, it felt it was warm here today, warmer, so I guess it feels kind of like baseball, right?
It does. I mean, you know, I don't think in Clearwater you have to worry about drinking water like you apparently have to around here, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get to the business at hand. We just had Charlie on, and he talked about the fact that he thinks that Derek Hall is somebody that can adjust to left-handed pitching, that he, while it hurts to not have Rhys Hoskins, that they can survive this. And, of course, Charlie's an optimist by nature. You're around that group and everything. How are they going to balance out, like, just the fact of losing Hoskins as the right-handed power bat on that side?
I mean, there really is no way to balance it out. I mean, the balancing out is going to be that they need two guys in the middle of that lineup, Nick Castellanos and Alec Bohm, two right-handed hitters, to have better power numbers this season. I mean, I think it's pretty simple. Like, you're going to get what you get from Hall, but, I mean, I think you have to look at other spots on the field, and Castellanos obviously underperformed last year, and Bohm was a guy who, ended up being about league average at the plate, which was great because he was not that before, and now I think he's trying to take the next step in the game, and that's hitting for more power. So I think the right-handed pop's going to have to come from different spots now, obviously. I don't know if I necessarily this is what I'll say about Hall. I don't know if I necessarily share, Charlie's optimism about him against left-handed pitchers, but I'll say this, like, I was really impressed with Hall's spring. And it's not in, like, he always hits the ball hard. We know that. He just, his quality of the bats were really good. He walked 9 times against 9 strikeouts this spring. And again, spring numbers are spring numbers. But
right.
The other thing about Hall is that, he bats left-handed, and we talked about all these guys who are going to benefit from the more shift. And it's a lot of left-handed hitters, and Kyle Schwarber is the guy who comes to mind. But it's not every left-handed hitter is going to benefit from no more shift. It's the guys who hit the ball hard. Left-handed hitters who hit the ball really hard are going to benefit, because if you're hitting it at the second baseman who's standing on the dirt now and you're hitting it hard, it's hard to get those balls. And Hall hits the ball hard. And, like, there were 4 or 5 hits this spring where I was like, that is not a hit last year for Hall. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what it's going to look like. They're going to miss Rhys Hoskins, but I think other guys are going to really just step up other than Derek Hall.
Is Hoskins lost more with – look, the fact that – I think the biggest thing that they're going to miss with Hoskins is Hoskins was one of the best guys in their lineup at working counts and getting pitchers and forcing pitchers to throw a ton of pitches, which as you went later in games, I thought got in the bullpens, got in the softer spots. I think that's one area – everybody looks at the 30 and 90 or whatever, but that's something that is not easily replaced, and I think that's where they're going to miss – Hoskins maybe more than people realize.
And then it comes to a guy like Bryson Staub, who we saw at times after June 1 or after July 1 last year, again, quality of bat. Like, he would give you some good at-bats. We saw in the postseason, too. I mean, he was clearly out of gas and overmatched, but the at-bats were good, and they were long, right? I mean, he fouls off a lot of pitches. He works deep counts. He's going to be hitting, in the bottom third of the lineup, not usually where Hoskins is. But again, if you're talking about, replacing those kind of skills that they lose from Hoskins, it's going to have to come from a collection of guys. And Dot's a guy who can work deep counts, and they'll need him to do it. Schwarber is the same way. Worked a lot of deep counts last year. He's going to have to do it again. So this is going to have to be a collective effort here, especially, in the first few months without Bryce Harper. You're already going to have one quote-unquote bench guy in the lineup because you don't have Harper and you have the DH, and now you're going to have two bench guys in the lineup on an everyday basis. And really, the onus is going to fall a little more on Rob Thompson to find, the right mix, because there are a lot of different, permutations here for this lineup. And there's a lot of different combinations they can use and ideas they can go. And the manager is going to, have a little more pressure on him to make the right lineup every day.
What have you seen from Castellanos in Clearwater? And, it's almost a strange thing. There's times where you see him going the opposite field where you go, okay, well, that looks good. And then there's times you see him strike out, and it looks like last year.
He looks like a guy who was trying to make some adjustments. And we know the adjustments, like he's standing a little closer to the plate, a little further up in the batter's box. And there were times where you saw, oh, wow, like, it's making a difference. And then there were times where you saw he looked like the guy from last year. And that's, when you're making adjustments, and I would say they're drastic adjustments, but they're pretty big adjustments for him. And, he it's going to take him a little bit. And I don't know, Kevin. I mean, like, it's hard to imagine him being as bad as he was last year, especially with the power numbers. I mean, a 389 slug.
Right.
This is a guy who's coming to the year. That's about 100 points below, his career average coming into the season, which is crazy. But
they were able to get away with it last year. I don't think without Hoskins they could get away with it as much this year, to be honest.
The margin is thinner. You know, without a year of Hoskins and without
Harper,
you know, your margin is thinner. And that, look, I mean, the numbers they got from the shortstop position last year were terrible. And now you're adding, you know, a world-class shortstop to your lineup. So, you know, there's different places, you know, where the lineup will improve and be better from last year. But and people have been asking me, like, you know, is Castellanos going to have a bounce-back season? And my answer has been kind of a cop-out. It's just like, I really don't know. Like, I haven't seen enough to say yes. I haven't seen enough to say no. I mean, I think it's hard to imagine it being as bad as last year. And I know this. I mean, man, like, he could really win back a lot of people if he steps up here and delivers, you know, some slug in the middle of that.
Matt Gelb joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Let me turn to the pitching. And obviously, you know, yesterday it was pretty clear that things between Aaron Nola and the Phillies are on pause, at least for right now. Dave Dombrowski saying that. It didn't, at least with the quotes that were put out there by Dombrowski and Nola's agent, it didn't feel like there's a lot of acrimony there. But it just, I was a little surprised that they put the brakes on here with a week still to go before spring training, or before a regular season.
I'm not surprised. I mean, just in what I've been hearing the last 10 days or so, you're right. There's not a lot of acrimony, but I'll say this. I mean, there was a clear difference of opinion on how Nola should be valued. And, you know, there's two ways of looking at this, right? I mean, from the Philly side, you're like, okay, well, we don't want to bid against ourselves. You know, how do we know he's going to get on the open market? And from Nola's side, you're like, well, what am I, you know, what if I have another big season? Like, how much money, you know, would I be giving up by settling for a deal now? Or, I mean, of course, you know, if he would have signed a deal now, it would have been for a lot of money, you know, a lot of money. But, you know, Nola is a really interesting case to me. I mean, you know, his camp will make comparisons to some of the, you know, more elite pitcher contracts we've seen, you know, contracts of more than $200 million, you know, which I think is what, you know, his side was asking for, you know, at the very least more than $200 million. I don't know that 100%, but just reading the tea leaves, I think that was, you know, it definitely started with a two. So, you know, they're comparing him to those kind of pitchers, and the Phillies might be comparing to, you know, guys who were less durable, but kind of, sort of in the same caliber. I mean, it's interesting because Nola's in the middle there. Like, he's not, I don't know that you look at him as like an elite ace type Cy Young pitcher.
Right.
But he's more durable and better than like that next tier. He's sort of in this like one and a half tier, like tier between one and two. And it's hard to, I think, come up with like a really fair value. Like, I can see this from both sides. I can see why the Phillies were reluctant to go into uncomfortable territory, and I can see why Nola's side was like, we're not going to settle for this. So,
but Matt, Nola's taking more of the risk here, clearly, though. I mean, if Nola, you know, he just saw his teammate of a long time in his contract year lose his season. I know he's been durable, and I know everything, but he's betting a lot by not taking what's kind of been out there and guaranteed in front of him, going for the bigger payday, though.
I think the risk is mutual, Kevin. I really do. And I think the risk, yes, is great for Nola. It is. It's huge. I think the risk for the Phillies is really big here because replacing him, look at the free agent market.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. It's not good. They're not going to sign Shohei Ohtani, and it's not, you know, I'm not breaking
thank you,
news.
Thank you. Thank you for stopping that talk right away.
They're not going to sign Shohei Ohtani. Julio Urias is probably the second best or third best, you know, depending on how you view Nola, pitcher out there.
Yeah, Michaelis is now off the market as well. So,
yeah, and I know the Phillies are going to, you know, by the end of this year, they're going to have a better idea of, you know, where Andrew Painter and Mick Abel and Griff McGarry fit into the long term rotation picture. Right? You know, we'll have another year of evidence to see. Okay, this guy, yeah, he's a stud, or this guy, we have questions about him. You know, maybe they have a clearer picture of what their rotation is going to look like in 2024 and beyond, and maybe they say, we don't need to show off for Nola. But I don't know. I mean, like, even if two of those prospects have really good years, you're still looking at the rotation. You're like, you know, how do you replace an Aaron Nola? And that's a risk that the Phillies are taking by letting this go to free agency.
Well, and they're also taking the risk too, because you're going to have to do this with Wheeler next year as well.
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, you're right. I mean, it's a risk for the Phillies, but I also, I think it's more of a risk for Nola because we've seen that the Phillies are willing to pay top dollar. So it may cause him to swap.
They had, except for pitchers, right, Kevin? The largest contract the Phillies have signed a pitcher is still Cole Hamels' deal from more than 10 years ago, signed in 2012, the summer of 2012, for $144 million. That was the largest deal they've ever given to a pitcher. And you mentioned the Wheeler thing. I mean, the Wheeler deal, man, like 5 years and 118. I mean, an unbelievable contract. That was probably the best transaction Matt Klentak ever made. I mean, it really was a tremendous contract. They made a great bet on him. But you're right. They have paid top dollar for a lot of guys, but they haven't for starting pitching.
You mentioned the Hamels thing. Hamels at that time was very much, he didn't want to sign a deal midseason, remember? And this is kind of the same thing that the Nola camp is. So do you think at some point these two sides are going to, maybe not Nola directly, but his agent and Dombrowski talk and say, okay, let's reopen this during the season at some point quietly?
I don't. I mean, maybe the fit, you know, maybe he's pitching really well and the Phillies, you know, I don't know. I'm hypothetical.
Oh, I know. It's all hypothetical. Right.
And the Phillies go to say, hey, that number that you were floating to us in the spring, you know, what if we got there? Right. Or, you know, I don't know. And I doubt even then, you know, if he's having a really good season, it's even more incentive for to be like, all right, you know, if they're, you know, 2 or 3 months away from free agency, let's just take it to free.
Matt Gelb joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Last question for you. All right, obviously a great season is if you win the World Series or if you get back to the World Series. Is this series a failure if you don't make the playoffs, though, with the way the National League is set up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, they got to make the playoffs. I mean, and people have been asking, like, what's a successful season? I think I've said this on another show, and I think, and this is, like, it's a weird one, but I think a successful season then is if they have home field advantage and an NLCS.
Right.
Because that to me will mean that they've either won the division or that they have a higher seed than they did last year. But you're right. I mean, the state of the NL, look at it. I mean, there was like, you know, you have to squint and you'd say maybe 9 teams for 6 spots. I think realistically it's more like 8.
7. No, seriously, like beside Milwaukee,
it's not good.
Beside Milwaukee, the other 6 playoff teams feel like they're set from last year. Right?
Yeah, I mean, the Giants, people look at the Giants. I mean, you know, I don't know. I agree with you. I mean, it's not good. The Diamondbacks are a sneaky team. Like, I think they might surprise some people, but you're right. I mean, it's pretty barren in the middle there. So yeah, I mean, they have to make the playoffs. So I think that it would not be good if they missed the playoffs.
Well, Matt Gelb will be in Arlington, Texas at that big Salt Depot silo that they call a stadium. on Thursday.
It's but nice.
What?
It's nice.
It's nice.
It's a nice place.
I get it, but it's goofy looking.
Yeah, it is.
Matt, thanks for joining me tonight. Safe travels, and I'll see you at the ballpark probably next weekend.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks, Matt. Matt Gelb joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.